I'm Kerry Adams, and you're listening to Kerry's Connoisseurs, coming to you from Solid Gold Podcasts. Here we talk to the movers and shakers, the drinkers, the dreamers, and all the people who make it happen in the liquor and luxury industries from around the world. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another Kerry's Connoisseurs podcast. And today we're very lucky. I have got none other than my wine wizard, Michael Fridgeon, in the studio. He's not actually in the studio with me. We're doing this via a link, which for people like Michael and I, look at the color of our hair. It's quite testy and tricky to get it all done. But thank you to Jason. I've got Michael Fridgeon. Welcome, Michael. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Kerry.
It did take us a while. We had a little bit of a thing, but we always do. But somehow we managed to sort this thing out, and here we are on Riverside. The reason that I've got you here with me is because this week saw the announcement of the winners of the 24th Investec Trophy Wine Show competition, and that's why I'm speaking to you. It sounds like another resounding sort of triumph and success. Talk to me.
Well, I always like to think every year that it's a triumph and success, which you've implied. And I have to say that partly the methodology has been tried and tested for so long that nothing is perfect, but it was as glitch-free, I think, as it could have been. We had a fabulous team of judges. I think the quality of judges in South Africa, a result of the training programs, a result of the experience the guys are getting, coupled with the fact that we just had a completely spectacular team of international judges, two of whom had judged the show twice before, so they could bring perspective, they could make comparisons with how things were 20 years ago. Altogether, it was just a really, it was like clockwork, everything fitted together, and there was a great panel dynamic, which is so important because if people bump heads, it's really hard to get a consensus-driven result. So all in all, we're very happy with the wines. And last night in Cape Town, which was the first great tasting, the next is tomorrow night in Johannesburg, was the first time I got to taste the trophy golds and silvers from the whole show with the labels in front of me. It's all very well to taste them blind, but it's a different thing altogether when you have the labels. And I look.
Well, of course, I mean,
this is a really lovely lineup of wines.
It's a bit of an ongoing argy-bargy boxing match, really, the sighted versus the blind tasting fraternities. And personally, I just there's times when we need to taste sighted, but for me personally, I think that it is so much better to taste these competitions blind. You know, there's all kinds of things that can interfere with your, with the psychology of tasting, as you and I both well know. And then the next thing, as you say, is the chemistry on any specific panel, because just as the chemistry in the glass has to be magic, so too does the personal chemistry around the table have to be equally magic, because it's a moving target and it's a hard thing to defend. When you sit in at a dinner table and people say, oh, gosh, you know, tasting blind, it's a load of bollocks. How do you know what you're tasting? Bar, bar, fish paste, blah, blah, and we carry on. It is a difficult thing to do. It is difficult to taste wine. And you do bounce off your peer intellect. Talk to us a bit about blind versus sighted versus how do you see it going. You know, I think blind is the way to go.
I think if you're trying to judge a competition, if you're trying to judge your wine on its merits, the only way to do that is blind, because there's no marketing message. There's a fab quote, which I'll pull up from Jancis Robinson, who says that you don't want, in a sense, to be misled by the messaging. She says, I value the chance to really assess wine by wine, not knowing who produced them, and not being bedazzled by reputation. So that's what blind tasting does. When people look at a wine that they think should have got gold and it sits on bronze, as often as not, what that tells you is that the marketing team has done a fabulous job and everybody likes to believe that the product in question is world class or worthy of a 500 or 800 rand price point. But that's
which in itself market. Is fabulous. Yeah, I was going to say it's fabulous if we're business. If we're running a marketing competition. Yeah. Then we want to do a cited one, and we're going to give a prize to the people who did the best marketing job, because it's hard to market wine in the world. It's very hard, but it's a completely separate competition, isn't it?
We're tasting a really nice idea, which would be to run a competition where you look at the you get a survey of what people think about the name, you look at the price 100%. Point, and then you compare it to the blind tasting, and the gap that's the widest should give an award to the marketing team that got it there.
Let's do it. I think it could be brilliant. I think we should make a little aside to the trophy show next year. The marketing trophy. Let's do one of those. But it's true, and I think that it's a very important message to drive home to wine lovers around the world and people who love to debate stuff that they don't have all the facts on. It's difficult to taste wine. You don't go to the steakhouse and say to the, you know, the purveyor of the steakhouse, I'm going to sit you down in front of 6 plates here, and I would like you to tell me how old this rump is, where the cow was slaughtered, what did the cow eat for 6 years before we slaughtered it, how long was it hung for? You know, people don't do that. But strangely enough,
they theoretically could. In other words, if you're on top of your profession, you should be able to say whether it was grain-fed or grass-fed. You should be able to talk about the cut, the aging. That's what wine professionals do. When they sit down,
I know.
But they don't sit there to tell you the name of the cow. The one thing that doesn't happen in the competition, and I stringently tell the judges, I don't know what's been entered, so I'm not there thinking, I wonder if I can find A or B. And the judges want to take themselves down the rabbit hole of saying, I'm so sure that this wine is X or Y, because once you're there, the wine will fulfill your expectations of it.
A lot of judges do that, and I am very critical of that. And I've been on panels where people say, or you can see that they're being swayed by whose wine they think they're tasting in the glass. And it does happen.
Sure.
It does happen. But then you just don't use those tasters again. You know, that's for my money. Yeah. But I'm much more harsh than most people, but I hear you. 68 Chardonnays. I've always said, when I came back from living in England, everybody said to me, Shiraz is going to save South Africa's wine industry. Shiraz is the grape of choice. Shiraz is blah, blah, blah. I love South African Chardonnay. I think that we make some seriously super smart Chardonnay. And I see that it had the biggest number of entries in your trophy show this year. Tell me about the Chardonnays and which one won, because I haven't looked at that.
Okay. So it was a great class. It had several gold medals and, of course, a trophy. So you can see it was a strong class and strong.
Oh, I did see it. It was De La Graaf, wasn't it?
Pardon? And the winning Chardonnay was the De La Graaf, the Bunhoek Reserve, which won
which we love.
Last year, previous vintage. Last year, in other words, a year ago, the more expensive terrace block finished a point below it. Because the judges felt that there was too much wood thrown at the wine. If you're selling a wine, in this case, the terrace block is 3 times the price of the winning wine. Hmm. Yeah, you've got to make it taste expensive. It's like the motor car is there. You can't see under the bonnet, but if the seats smell of leather, you know you've bought an expensive car. So that's often what happens with wood. And after 6 months or a year longer, it integrates better, and it may very well turn out in time to be a super smart wine. But 2 years in a row, the De La Graaf Chardonnay won Best Chardonnay and Best White Wine, and it is a very
– Well, that's nice.
Finally.
That's nice consistency, isn't it, for your competition? I love to see consistent judging like that, provided the same people enter every year. You never know that, so – But it's very nice to know that that's the case.
The winning winery this year, the champion winemaker of 2025, is Haken Viljoen, who won 2 years ago in 2023. So once again, there's consistency in his performance, and I'd like to say consistency in the application of the aesthetics that we like to reward at the show.
Okay, so Zevenwacht still owned by Harold Johnson? Who was that? Yes. Is it still Harold Johnson's farm?
He spent a lot of money turning that farm from being good commercial wine into a very fine wine. It's got a great location.
Do you know, it's such an interesting thing.
It's got a proper winemaker. It's very good wine.
It is very good wine. And I can tell you an interesting thing, that long before I even drank wine or even thought about wine or thought that it was going to be part of my life for the rest of my life, my mother worked for a doctor called Donnie Jacobs. And Donnie Jacobs was a shareholder at Zevenwacht, and Harold was a patient of his. And that was one of the first wines that I was ever introduced to in my life when I turned about 18 or 19. And we used to drink Zevenwacht. And it wasn't so nice then. I can tell you, it was drinkable.
It was owned by Gilbert Killane. And Gilbert in a bunch of shareholders, of which Donnie was one. Right. And then when Gilbert exited, Harold bought it. I think Harold planted the vineyard, the Shannon Vineyard, which is now an old vine vineyard.
Yes, it would be.
Years. It's twice won the trophy at the show and is an old vine wine as well as the trophy for the show's best.
Okay.
It's spectacular.
Okay, good. Fantastic. So well done to them. I mean, it's a lovely story, that, isn't it? It's
absolutely.
It's heritage and it's track record and it's pedigree and it's progress and it's ambition and it's something for everybody to sort of hook their thing on and say, yes, you can sort of thing. You
and
know what I mean?
There's a message here for young winemakers and young proprietors, which is that the vineyards you plant today may yet become certified old vine vineyards in your lifetime.
Yes.
Produce wines of the quality that Hagen is now able to produce from vineyards planted in the 1980s.
Just help me. To be part of the old vines Shannon project, you've got to be like 37 or 40, hey?
35 years, and it's any old vineyard, i.e. not any old vineyard, but any old vineyard that is proven to be 35 years or older. Mostly we see in this country Chenin Blanc, but now we've got some Sauvignon coming through. I think we have an old vine Chardonnay, old vine Cab, obviously lots of old vines. And so it's going to be interesting. I landed up, I don't want to go off down a real tangent, but at last night's public tasting, Gerard Peterson, the guy who developed the protocols for managing vineyard virus, was one of the members of the public. He was the guy who cured the problems for the New Zealanders, and he's been applying those same protocols here. His excitement that we are now getting old vineyards on properties that would previously have had to pull out that vineyard after 10 or 15 years
was
because they're managing the problem differently.
Brilliant.
Very exciting.
Michael, I was excited to see that my beloved Kruiterpost Sea Salter, you know, I remember when they first bottled that wine. They brought it to Norman Goodfellows, and I said to the brothers, what are the Kruiterpost brothers' names? Help me.
Well, it's made by Lucas Wenzel, but it's the
you know who I'm talking about.
Exactly. Hang on a second.
this is Peter like Pence. I'm running a
– Peter Pence. But
the Pence.
Yeah. Peter, I know.
But it wasn't Peter. It was the other brother who came to me. But anyway, and I tasted it, and it was just so delicious. It's different. It's very different, and we need different sort of Sauvignon Blancs because Sauvignon Blanc is not the prettiest girl in the lineup. She's not. She's not going to be crowned queen of white wine for me anyway. But for some strange reason, she's very popular. I don't know. Sometimes you get ugly girls that are popular. That happens, you know.
I'm not going down that road. I know where it is.
Come, Michael. I'm trying hard. I'm trying. But anyway.
Well, give me some more hate mail. That's what you want.
The Sea Salt of Sauvignon Blanc is one of my favorite South African Sauvignon Blancs. And if you can say Sea Salt of Sauvignon Blanc is my South African favorite, you are fine with your Simple Simon Says trick. If you remember, Jonathan had a lisp. He used to say Simple Simon Says, and we had to do that a million times a day.
And I had a lisp. Cicely was a thrifty thistle sifter.
And so, oopsie.
Sea Salt gets you there. But the really exciting thing is that they got a trophy for their Merlot. Now, be very clear, a Merlot trophy we haven't seen in 5 or 7 years. And the last
Merlot,
which would have been the Italian clone, which is much harder to manage, was just awkward and gawky and green and still a bit raisiny at the same time. This is a straight down the line, delicious red wine.
Really?
And it's so exciting to see a Merlot, which, as with Sauvignon Blanc, is a very popular.
Yes, it's the ugliest boy in the matric dance. It is.
Yeah, well,
he can't dance. His ears are too big. Come. So why do you think? Why do you think that Italian clone is doing well up the west coast of South Africa?
Well, I'm not sure.
What do you think happened there?
Clone is the first question, because we new clone material has been coming in the last 10 or 20
Nick,
years.
It's Nick Pence, Michael.
Nick's
it's
the
just
one
come to me. Nick is my boy, yeah.
Peter came to me. Anyway, I think that the either they're getting better at managing that very tricky Italian clone, or it's the new clone material which has come in and which is more authentically Bordeaux in style. Remember that the Italian clone is the one very popular in Friuli, and our climate and Friuli are not the same beast.
They're not the same. I don't particularly like Merlot by itself, as we said, but we have been producing some particularly green, stalky, gawky, uncomfortably angular Merlots, and that's just not how they should be, really. You know what I mean? It's very nice.
Instagram thing. It's on our gallery of stuff from the show, where Michel Bétain, who is he is the kind of legend of French wine judging, is asked about our Bordeaux blends, and he is saying, "Well, it is a little bit like a marriage. It is the husband and wife, but for it to work, you need the husband and the wife and the lover. You need."
That's why I love the French. We love them. Michel, you can come back. So, we then had, in the thing that Janice sent me, Michael, I didn't have that there was even any Merlot entered. I had Bordeaux blends, Cabernet, Shiraz, and Pinot.
And those are the top classes. So there would have been fewer than 30 Merlots in the mix, but they were there. There's obviously a Merlot class. There's also, you'd have seen the blended Sem Sav class, which is always small and always good. So it won't have more than 10 or 20.
And then I wanted to ask you.
The niche whites. There are lots of other wines. It's just a selection of the large classes.
Speak to me about Shiraz, because, you know, Shiraz, I keep my premise on Shiraz as well. Who won?
So it was interesting. Shiraz produced a host of gold medals this year. The class was judged and, in fact, chaired by Tom Carson, who has chaired just about every Australian show. It was his third trip here. He is exuberant in his praise of what has happened in 20 years. Mm. He said that when he was first here, there was very little to like about South African Shiraz.
Yeah, no, I'm with him.
The end was Australia, watch out. It was very strong at the top, and there are a number of interesting reasons for that. Remember, most of our Shiraz vineyards were planted since 1999. So the vineyards are still relatively healthy and now have some age. The second point is the guys who were producing the truly ghastly Shirazes that we were tasting around 2007 to about 2015.
Oh, God, I really battled.
Planted it because they thought it was the red grape to save the world, but they had no clue as to how to make the wine. So there's been a natural attrition. Those guys who didn't succeed have either grafted over, pulled it out, or given up hope. But those guys who are good and who have persevered are now making some very smart wines. So if you look through what has happened in that class, you'll see some really, really good wines. So Groot for Santa Kroll, which is Durbanville, really good red wine territory, won a gold medal. Zevenwacht won a gold medal. Kleine Salzer, which wins a gold medal almost every year.
Shiraz
won a gold. And then the best Shiraz, and this is something coming full circle, as you will realize, Stellenzicht. The Aronite Syrah 2023 won best red of show and best Shiraz, and it's a delicious red wine.
It is a delicious wine.
It's not outrageously expensive. I don't have the price to hand, but it's certainly under 300 rand a bottle.
Stellenzicht make good wine. I give them a stamp of approval and a green flag any day of the week.
Cabernet as well. So once again, there's a real turnaround on that property.
Now, Stellenzicht, isn't that the property where Rioni's husband, Louis Strydom, is?
No, not anymore. The winemaker's there, but he's part of that. I think Louis is still
Didn't they put money in?
It's part of that whole consortium owned or put together by the German investor who's got Stellenzicht, Ernie Els, has bought Alto. So
has he bought Alto?
Chunk of the Helderberg is his. And Louis is not, as far as I know, doing the Stellenzicht, he's doing the Ernie Els.
He's a very good winemaker. And if I were given a choice to buy one wine farm in the Cape at the moment, it would be Alto.
Well, you missed the boat. It was in the market.
Why didn't you tell me?
Snaffled up.
Fabulous wine. Unbelievable value for money. Do they enter their wine into your competition?
I don't know what is entered. I only know what's on the awards table. I could go and dig around now. But
they must check, because if they don't, they should.
They should. Well, I think they're also doing is replanting. That property went through years of underinvestment. And the fact that they've turned around Stellenzicht is a sign that we're going to see spectacular things from
Alto. Mike Lee, I can remember a million years ago when I first went into retail, Stellenzicht was one of the biggest selling wines at Norman Goodfellow's. We used to sell up a store. It was delicious. It's really nice wine. And then it sort of disappeared, paled into insignificance and disappeared into the ether for a bit. So I'm really happy. That's a really nice result. I see that Baten Verwachten's Noble Late Harvest has done well, which I love to see because I love those sticky wines that we make. You know me.
I think it's won the trophy 3 years in the last four. And the year it didn't win the trophy, it won a gold. So it's right up there. That 1769 is very smart wine. And
in addition,
a museum class for a 2017 Sauvignon Blanc that is completely extraordinary.
It's from Baden Verwachten.
And complexity and that cooler climate, very kind of controlled management of the fruit. So it's quite aggressive when it's young, harmonizes beautifully. 8 years in the bottle. You just have to be patient.
Well, you know, I think we've always said that if we were allowed our way and we could actually just force our voice and insist upon appellation control, we would only plant Sauvignon Blanc in Constantia, wouldn't we?
No, you could plant it in Elgin. You might if you
maybe
want.
Maybe Durbanville.
And Durbanville for sure. Look at Taste. Taste Low got the trophy for the best Sauvignon Blanc. And he does more Sauvignon Blanc, different cuvées than, than
God has sheep, Yeah, I know. I saw he did very well. So all in all, how many medals were awarded, Michael?
Okay,
the same as last year or one new one?
Roughly the same. There were slightly more entries this year. So I'm going to try and give you a number on that. But basically,
it doesn't matter. There's lots. There's lots for the public to choose
from. Of which a big bunch got converted to best in class and then took on the trophies. You have 100 and call it 20 or 30 silvers and say 300 bronzes. The really interesting change there, and I reflected on it yesterday, was that in the early days of the show, probably 50 to 60% won no medal at all. And that's because the bottom of those classes was pretty dreary stuff. And now a bronze medal wine, a trophy wine show, is a really decent wine. It's, you know, it's
probably that was the next thing.
Exciting to get onto the platform where there's that real dense number of silvers. And between silver and gold, as you said at the beginning, that's almost performance art. It's how's the wine on the day. They are well-made wines. And the one that's just looking better edges ahead.
Absolutely. And that gets me to the next part of our discussion, which I think is so interesting for the general public to hear, which is one of the evolving things that makes up an argument for wine competitions. And that is that with the passing of time, people like you and me don't count so much anymore. And we have a new generation of palates entering the marketplace who want completely different things from what we were looking for. When you and I were first sort of set out in this wine industry, it was all a massive drive to try and improve whatever we had at our disposal, because we basically had a brandy and a couple of wine farms industry. You know, that's what it was. It's evolved into a very dynamic, diverse industry that is catering to a million different palates at this stage of the game and a much more diverse bank balance. So talk to me about that, because in the olden days, a competition wine that had a bronze, you didn't really look at them. Now, I would look at a trophy wine that had been awarded a bronze medal and say, wrap me up a dozen. I'm going to have those because I know it's going to be good value for money. Largely, it's going to be really good value for money. It wouldn't have been awarded a bronze if it was not medal worthy. And lastly, before I give you the floor again, 2 million rands worth of sales emanated from the retailer who is doing the sales from the show, which is port to port, and they do a really good job. 2 million rands worth of sales within 24 to 48 hours of the release of results. That's extraordinary. It's wonderful. Investec must be really pleased to be endorsing something that successful.
I really think they are. I'd like to believe they are. I think what it does tell you is that this is the one competition where consumers know that they can buy the wine in a sense sight unseen. If the judges have given it an endorsement, it's safe to buy without rushing around to taste first. Some people do prefer it. They'll be at the Sandton Convention Center tomorrow, and sadly some of them may find that the wines that are available sold out. I see 300 and something bottles of the Discovery of the Show have already just gone poof out of the
Do you have criteria that the wineries have to have X amount of cases available for sale?
They have to have 50 by 6, so they have to have a minimum
of
300 bottles at the time the award is announced. So once we've done the judging, the sellers of the winning wines are audited, and anybody who can't prove that within that certification batch, so exactly the same samples, the batch from which the samples were judged, the same wines have to be available and have to be supplied to the designated retailer at the time the results are announced, if not the wines are, and every year there are disqualifications. Oh dear, we sent the wrong wine overseas.
Yeah. the wine industry is notoriously badly organized.
For consumers to be able to buy good wines with a proper endorsement. So I think that part's very important. To go back to your earlier part of the question, the new audience, the diversity of that audience, and it'll be on display at the SCC tomorrow night. People who are coming into the world of wine as we did 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
With a passion, an interest, a desire to learn. And I do know that the winemakers all say that the hallmark of the Gauteng market is the level of interest and the unashamed desire to learn. There's not this pretense of, oh, yes, of course I knew that. It's much more, please tell me about your wine.
Yes, they're adventurous. They're much more adventurous.
Why is what it is, and that is something which will give real life to our industry. Around the world, the wine industries are moaning and groaning about losing consumers. Here in South Africa, there's a whole new wave of people who are falling in love with wine.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And this is just brilliant.
It is. It's wonderful. And we're very lucky to have been part of both sides of that scale.
Absolutely.
Because I love the adventure attached to, well, it's wine adventuring more than anything in Johannesburg, which we love. So thank you to the Johannesburg. I'm not going to be there tomorrow night, unfortunately. I booked tickets to Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto Number 2 at the Linda Auditorium tomorrow night, which than wine, I think.
8 o'clock start at the Linda. You can be there at 5 and taste wine first.
Can I? Can I swish through quickly? I'll sashay through maybe and come. I maybe come and see you. Michael, it's just another thing. There's no end to you and Janice. You just keep on producing stuff that's gorgeous and it's meaningful and it's additive. And without wishing to blow smoke, because we don't really need to blow smoke, you're my friend anyway. You just do a brilliant job. And so does Janice and Art Sorceress. So to you and to all the judges and to Investec, all the winemakers and everybody who was part of this year's Investec Trophy Show, thank you so much. It's just gorgeous to be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure. Cheers. Bye-bye. Yes.